So, of course, Raghunandan and Thakur we've spoken about many times before. He's the son of Mukunda. Mukunda was a physician and a great associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was such a great associate that even if he saw a peacock fan was fanning the king, who was a Muslim at that particular point, then he would faint in ecstasy. That's Vyabhachari Baba. Vyabhachari Baba means an expression of emotion that is transient and uncontrollable. You understand? That's Vyabhachari Baba. Vibhava is what? That which excites you. So the Vibhava was what in this particular case? The peacock fan. And the Vyabhachari Baba was his falling to the ground, fainting, foaming at the mouth. And then the king walked down and saw that Mukunda was in such a state, and he said, "What's the problem?" Mukunda said, "It's epilepsy," but the king actually knew it wasn't epilepsy. He knew it was a symptom of ecstasy. So, as far as Raghunandana is concerned, when Mukunda and Raghunandana went to Jagannath Puri to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Mukunda, his father, who is the father and who is the son? And of course, Raghunandana was, in one sense, the son, but Mukunda answered in the opposite way. He said, "Raghunandana is my father, and I'm his son." And the reason he answered in that way is because he considered Raghunandana his son to be more advanced than him, and the reason he considered Raghunandana to be more advanced than him was this particular story we're about to tell. One time, Mukunda had to go on some medical business. And when he went on medical business, he said to Raghunandana, who was about 6 or 7 years old, he said, "Please take care of the deities, make the offerings, and do the puja." So when he did that, he left on his medical service. Raghunandana didn't really know any of the mantras, so he went before the deities, offered the food, and said, "Eat." And he didn't see the deities eat. And therefore, he just kept crying out, "Eat, eat, eat." Some stories say that he threatened Krishna with a stick, but other stories say that he just cried in front of Krishna. And then Krishna just got off the altar and ate the food. So when Raghunandana's father came back, Mukunda came back, he said, "How did the offering go? Where's the Mahaprasadam?" And Raghunandana said, "There's no Mahaprasadam, because the deity has eaten everything." And Mukunda said, "That's impossible. Because Krishna, Angani, Asha, Shakalendriya, Dritimanti, Krishna eats with his eyes and his ears, and he leaves everything over." And Raghunandana said, "No, he ate everything." And so Mukunda said, "Show me." And Mukunda was looking through the window as Raghunandana was doing the offering. And that's actually what happened. Except Krishna only ate part of the meal, which was a ladu at that point, because he had just eaten. Krishna has a full belly, so he didn't have any appetite after that point. So when Mukunda saw that, he offered his obeisances to Raghunandana and accepted Raghunandana as his spiritual authority, even though Raghunandana was his son. So there's other stories about Raghunandana. One time, Abhiram Gopal Thakur, Abhiram Gopal was the personality he used to use a whip called Jai Mangala to give everybody Krishna consciousness. I wish I could do that. They were dancing together in the house of a devotee in a place called Boro Tangita. And Raghunandana's ankle bracelet fell off and fell into the pond. And then this Nupura, which is the ankle bracelet, is preserved today and it's put on the altar. And this pond is considered a holy place. According to many authorities, Raghunandana Thakur was Kandarpa Manjari. And according to other authorities, he was one of Krishna's sons in Dwarka, whose name was Kandarpa. And that's on the basis of Kavi Karnapur's Gaura Ganadesh Dipika, which is the elaboration on the ontological positions of Lord Chaitanya's associates. That means who Lord Chaitanya's associates were in Krishna Leela. Hmm. Let's see, that's about it. And Lord Raghunandana used to serve a deity of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now we're going to talk about Vamsidas Babaji, who's quite an interesting personality. Normally, Babajis are interesting personalities in any case, because Babajis are Bhajanandis. Bhajanandi means someone who is interested mostly in bhajan and not so much in preaching. And today, if you go to Radha Kund, you'll find many Babajis there. And some of them are bona fide Babajis. Other ones aren't interested in either collecting women or doing other things like that. And it's actually quite dangerous for devotees in ISKCON to go to Radha Kund unescorted, because the Babajis or the ones who are... the ones who steal ISKCON devotees away, they don't not only steal ISKCON devotees away in the sense of giving them something higher, but they criticize our Sampradaya. In fact, they even criticize Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur as not being bona fide. There's still that animosity between him and the Babajis, and that animosity started when he wanted to take charge of the body of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And he said to the Babajis, basically, anyone who has not had a licit life for the last month can take this transcendental body, and nobody stood up to do that. And then he said, anybody who has not had a licit life for the last 2 weeks, and then basically he said, the last few days, and nobody stood up, then indicated that the Babajis weren't following too strictly. Although we don't want to criticize all the Babajis, there's many bona fide, nice Babajis. In any case, that animosity continues even to this day, and then they say that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was never initiated by Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And generally, they accept someone called Lalit Prasad Thakur, who is one of the other sons of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Prabhupada said that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has a transcendental controversy or some sort of difference of opinion. So we have to be very careful. In fact, I was just walking around Govardhan, and as I was walking around Govardhan, I ran into Gopi Puranadana Prabhu. Some of you may remember him. And we were talking about where he should situate his school. He has a Sanskrit school there. Right now, the school is situated in the center of the city of Govardhan, which is not the most congenial place, because in the city of Govardhan, it's very, very noisy. There's a lot of mosquitoes. There's malaria. Many of the devotees are getting malaria. There's stool all over the streets and everything like that. So originally, they had purchased some land at a place called Chandra Sarovara. Chandra Sarovara is a place where the moon shone for one night of Brahma as a full moon while Krishna danced the Rasa dance. So I said, how's that property going? And he said, well, there's some legal problems, as happens in India. And it's basically a loss. You know, whatever they spent on the property, they've lost. They bought several acres. So I said to them, why don't you do something with us? There's land available right near where our school is at Govardhan. Our school is like 1 kilometer from Radha Kund, and it'd be very nice to work together. And he said, it's too close to Radha Kund. I said, what do you mean it's too close to Radha Kund? He says, well, the devotees who were in the Sanskrit school, they would tend to wander off and go to Radha Kund and then get, you know, either captured or bewildered by what's happening in Radha Kund. So Radha Kund is quite a dangerous place for those who are not fixed in the service to their spiritual master and fixed in their service to our disciplic succession. So it's interesting, because I was actually saying I'd make the arrangements, you know, you can have a piece of land there and everything like that. And it's just too close. We have to be far away from Radha Kund. So that's a word of caution for us. as far as the Babaji's are concerned. So, anyway, so there are some nice Babaji's there, and there are some Babaji's who are taking ISKCON devotees away. When you go to Radha Kund, you'll run into a whole bunch of Westerners, much more than you would elsewhere in Govardhan. When I was there this summer, practically speaking, I don't think I saw any Westerners at Govardhan, going around Govardhan at all, except for Gopi Pranadan and Prabhu on his motor scooter. But at Radha Kund, you run into all these Westerners. It's very unfortunate. People are trying to jump too high, too soon, and they have a delusion that they're very advanced in devotional service. They want to move to Radha Kund, and actually they're not ready for that. So a little caution for you. We should remain faithful to our sampradaya. So, but this Vamsidas Babaji was a Babaji, and he was a bona fide Babaji. That means a really qualified personality. And as we mentioned before, Babajis are generally, they're always Bhajananandis. And we in our Krishna conscious movement are Ghoshtananandis. Ghoshtananandi means preacher. Although a Ghoshtananandi will sometimes do some bhajan, it's not that he is prohibited from doing bhajan. It's not that you can't sit and chant 64 rounds someday just because you happen to be a Ghoshtananandi. And it's not prohibited for a Babaji to preach. But it's just the general concentration like that. So Vamsidas Babaji was quite an unusual Babaji, because most Babajis, they'll have a very fixed bhajan. What do I mean by fixed bhajan? They'll chant a certain number of rounds every day. Like Haridas Thakur, he was basically chanting 3 lakhs of the name of Krishna every day. What is 3 lakhs? 3 lakhs means 3 times 64 rounds. A lakh is 100,000 names of God. So there's, if you do the mathematics, it's 16 words in each mantra, right? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You can count it, 16. So 16, and you do 108 of those in a round, and then you do 108 times 64, 108 times 64 times 16, and you end up with about 100,000. That's a lakh, a little Hindi for you. And so 64 rounds times 3, that's a lot. It's 192 rounds. That's a lot every day. And anyway, so I was speaking to one of my friends at Radha Kund at Govardhan when I was there. I said, how many rounds do you chant every day? And he said, for a while I was chanting 4 lakhs. I mean, it's 4 times 64. He said, I was just eating enough so just to keep the soul and the body. And he said, but then I couldn't do any service because he's in charge of a particular temple. And he said, I couldn't do any service, so I reduced it to about 3 lakhs. 3 times 64. So, I mean, there's many great devotees like that. He's the person who's in charge of the Uddhava temple. His name is Jamuna Jivana. I posted some pictures of him on Facebook. And all day long he's serving. Really amazing personality. Serving, dresses, just basically in the gumsho. It's the cleanest temple at Govardhan, practically speaking. So, and on Ekadasi, I generally try to chant 64 rounds, but it takes me all day long. So I couldn't imagine chanting 64 times 3. That's even when I stop eating, it still takes me like 8 hours to chant 64 rounds. And I have to start in the day, you know, with the consciousness that's what I'm doing, get a lot done before Mangal Arati. And this way I can get 64 rounds done. Anyway, so Vamsidas Babaji was not regulated like that, not like your ordinary Babaji. He didn't chant a fixed number of rounds. He didn't chant any special mantras for worshiping. Although he had deities, he didn't chant any special mantras. And his interaction with the world left people very confused and bewildered, because he would speak either very fast or something that people couldn't understand. And they thought, basically, they thought he was crazy. Now, sometimes devotees do that so that they won't be harassed by others. Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't do that, but he feigned means he made believe, that he was very ill in his final year so he could just sit down and chant so people wouldn't bother him with so many things. And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he would chant in the latrine so that people wouldn't bother him. Or he would chant on the side of the Jalungi where it was very smelly so people wouldn't bother him. It was very smelly because people would pass stool there and everything like that. So sometimes you see this very sincere devotee, they act either crazy. Oh, of course, we have Rishabhadev, Lord Rishabhadev, who performed this process called Jata Yoga. Jata Yoga means to act completely crazy and to become detached from this material world. It's actually another way of becoming detached from this world, is to act very crazy, because generally in this world we're very concerned with how our reputation, how people think, or what people think of us, you know, whether people love us, and things like that. And I've seen that in this world, sometimes we have these loving relationships, whether it's a loving relationship, guru, disciple, or friendship, or whatever, and then the person turns against you, and it's Krishna's arrangement to teach you detachment from this world. Because all these different relationships, and you're trying to enjoy, you know, whatever. It's like people, when they fall in love, they talk on the phone for so many hours a day. And someone asked me the question the other day, what do I do when my even ex-boyfriend calls me on the phone? And I said, look, you have a cell phone that tells you who's calling. You just don't answer. He said, oh, well, I will cause him pain in that way. And I said, who cares? So, you're not responsible for someone else's pain. You're not responsible for someone else's pleasure. You got to protect yourself. So, but it's like that. The relationships in this world, other than spiritual relationships, are really based upon a mutual business deal. You know, that I fulfill your needs, at least some of them, and you fulfill some of my needs. So, Vaishnavas sometimes act in such a way that people will actually disrespect them. And even when they don't act that way, Krishna arranges that so they'll become detached. Anyway, so Vamsi Das Babaji acted like that. Although he was accepted by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur as one of the greatest Vaishnavas. In fact, he was accepted as such a great Vaishnava that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur instructed his disciples to get his remnants, Vamsidasa's remnants, to bring it to the Gaudiya Mouth so they could all eat his remnants. I mean, that's really unusual. And when Vamsidas Babaji would see Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would proclaim, oh, a Manjari has come. Manjari means like a small girl, prepubescent girl. And he would say, so won't Radha also come? So this is his interactions with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was born in 1859. And there were seven children in his family. And he was the son of a poor fisherman. In other words, his caste was extremely low. I mean, that's about as low as you can get. Fisherman caste. And also in India, they had this thing called the Bungies. The Bungies are the people who clean the sewers. Like in India, the sewers are, it's not that you just have plumbers and things like that. You don't need plumbers in India because the sewers are open on the side of the road. And so the Bungies every day, they take shovels or brooms or something like that and take all the stuff out of the sewers and put it into carts and take it somewhere else. I was asking the devotees there, who pays the Bungies? Is it the government? And they said, no. That if you want to keep the sewers in front of your house clean, you have to hire a Bungie to do it every day. In other words, they have contracts. They have whole Bungie colonies. I mean, colonies where people who are sewer cleaners live. So anyway, so a fisherman is just about as low as that. And so he was occupied in his family business of selling fish before he became Krishna conscious, before he took up the Babaji order. But every day, he would come back from selling fish and associate at a Gornatai temple with a devotee named Narottama Das Babaji. This is not Narottama Das Thakur, it's a different personality. But this Narottama Das Babaji, he was a follower of Narottama Das Thakur. And he would teach him about the songs of Narottama Das Thakur. So he became, this Vamsi Das became very, very detached from this world, and his parents got worried. In Indian culture, if you become very detached from this world, and of course your parents get worried, they don't want you to join the Hare Krishna temple. So his parents naturally made an arrangement for him to get married. I mean, I've seen this before in America, where someone from an Indian family is very interested in Krishna consciousness, wants to move in the temple. The parents will do anything to keep him from moving in the temple, even though the parents themselves may be initiated devotees or devotees. And we had this in a particular case with a girl who wanted to join a number of years ago. And eventually, I won't tell you what happened, but eventually it didn't come out very well. So they got him married, and he was very unhappy in married life, and so he basically ran away from home. And he took initiation in the Babaji order from this Narottama Das Babaji, and he became extremely austere during that time. He would sometimes go without food or water for several days at a time. He would take a bath even when it was freezing cold. And he was over 6 feet tall, so a very tall personality. And even at the age of 80, he always remained healthy. He would walk so fast that younger people couldn't come up with him, catch up with him, sorry. But he had a very unkempt appearance. His hair and his beard were completely uncut and matted. And as described, his eyes looked wild. And his behavior was intimidating. People couldn't understand what he was saying. Sometimes he spoke about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Sometimes he spoke about Krishna's pastimes in Braj. And his favorite phrase was, Bhakta Vatsal Hari, Pranabalabha Hari. And he would shout this out continually wherever he went. His pleaser of the devotees, the life of the devotees, Hari. And he would cry in this way. He said, Bhakta Vatsal Hari, like that. Very loud. But in spite of all this, he had a keen sense of discrimination as to who he would associate with. He would be able to see the hidden motives of so-called Vaishnavas, like different upper sampradayas. And he always spoke consistently, whenever people could understand him, with the Siddhanta of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. He traveled with three sets of deities wherever he went. And listen to this. He had a small Balagopal deity. That means, you know, like a lot of Gopal you've seen many times before. He had 6-inch metal deities of Radha Govinda and 3-foot wooden deities of Gornatai. 3 foot is like this. So in other words, he traveled with these deities. And he would constantly be engaged in talking to them. All day long he would talk to them. His mood was that of an affectionate parent. And even if he referred to himself, he would refer to himself in the third person as Vamsi Das. So one time he went to Jagannath Puri. He was traveling all over the place. And during the Rath Yatra festival, the deities and the carts refused to move. And then Vamsi Das had some conversation with Lord Jagannath on the cart, and then the cart moved right away after that. Another time he wanted to bathe his deity, the Balagopal deity, in the sea at Jagannath Puri. And he was some distance away from the sea, so he said to the sea, come here, bathe the deity. So all of a sudden there was a tsunami. And giant waves came. and crossed over the beach, and he was able to bathe his deities. Another time he was going across a river, Mahanandi, and he said to the boatman, go to this particular place, there's a nice snake here. So he went to this place, and there was a snake, and then the boatman was shocked, and he said, this is Anantadev, Anantashesh, Anantashesh has come. So another time, at the middle of the night, 50 attractive women, extremely beautiful women, dressed in white, came and offered obeisances to Vamsidas in the middle of the night and left without saying anything. And people were shocked. You know, because in India, ladies don't go out in the middle of the night. It just doesn't happen. It's mostly in the West that the ladies are going out in the middle of the night, driving cars and everything. Of course, in India, is becoming different now. Now I was in Delhi, and many ladies were driving motorcycles. Anyway, so it was understood that these were demigoddesses who had come to get his blessings. Another story is one day he was cooking sweet rice for his deity, Balagopal, and before offering it, he just threw it away and got very angry. And he said, look, you ate before without my permission. You ate some rice and guru preparation without my permission. So it turned out that in the Radha Govinda temple in Vrindavan, which was on the other side of India, they wrote to the temple, that the deity had just eaten rice and gore that day. So he was worshipping the same deities as in the Radha Govinda temple, but at a long distance away. Anyway, that's interesting. Another day, a man was suffering from cholera. I mean, just one comment. Just like in the Catholic Church, that someone is put up for sainthood, and one of the requirements is that they must have done a miracle, like cured someone. And so you see these Vaishnavas do so many miracles like that. Although, the greatest miracle, as Srila Prabhupada said, was turning hippies into happies. I mean, the greatest miracle is that we're here, that I'm here after all these years. That's a great miracle. So one time there was a man suffering from cholera, and he lay outside of Vamsidas's hut for 3 days moaning and moaning and moaning and groaning. And Vamsidas eventually came out and gave him some a tulsi leaf and put it on his tongue, and immediately the man was cured. Another time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to him when he was very old and infirm, and he had trouble going out to do madhukari. Lord Chaitanya came to him and said, don't go out anymore. You're too old. I will feed you. And then Vamsidas got very angry at Lord Chaitanya. He said, you want to feed me? I will not accept this. And he raised the stick to the deities. When people came to him to ask for material benefits, he would strongly chastise them. And one of his main instructions was, whoever offends a Vaishnava cannot be saved. And reciting Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions, Jivadoi Namaruchi Vaishnava Seva Iha Chara Dharma Nahi Juna Sanatana. This is a very important instruction. This is the essence of our process of devotional service. Kindness to all living beings, taste for the holy name, and service to the Vaishnavas. Three things. Kindness to all living beings, service to the holy name, service to the Vaishnavas, taste for the holy name, sorry, and service to the Vaishnavas. Apart from this, there is no other religion. Another time, a man asked Vamsidas how to attain God, and Vamsidas replied, the personality of Kali is very powerful. It's an interesting quote. When Kali came, Krishna told Narada, now it is time for me to go. And Narada asked, what will be the future of the creatures in this world? Krishna replied, those who worship the brahmanas and feed them will attain me. Narada asked, what of those who were too poor to serve the brahmanas? Krishna replied, Those who worship me with flowers and tulsi will attain me. Narda asked, what of those who are lame from birth? Krishna replied, if someone only once at the end of the day calls my name with undivided attention and devotion, he will attain me. So on March 17th, March 17, 1944, Vamsidas returned to his home, but actually resided outside the village because a sannyasi is never supposed to go into the village or return to the former family. And he resided there for some time, and on July 23rd, and that's the Western calendar, of course we celebrate disappearance and appearance days based upon the Vaishnava calendar, but on July 23rd, 1944, Vamsidas Babaji concluded his earthly pastimes and resumed his service to the Lord in the local Vrindavan. So that's Vamsidas Babaji. So today we are commemorating his disappearance day and the disappearance day of Raghunandana Thakur. Any questions or comments about these two great personalities? Yeah. Why do they come? What? What's the purpose? Well, there's several different versions. Now, I'm not going to speculate upon Vamsidas's position in the spiritual world, but there's several different purposes. One purpose is that someone is just like winding up his devotional service to go back to Godhead. Another purpose is that so that we will be inspired by hearing or seeing such a hearing about or seeing such a personality, how someone is so detached from this material world they're able to do that. Just like when I go to Govardhan and I see my friend Jamuna Jivan is taking care of the Uddhava temple, I get inspired. You know, I don't know what his position is, but he's chanting like 3 lakhs a day, taking care of the temple, doing 5 offerings a day. I mean, here we have 5 offerings a day, dressing the deities, cooking for the deities, cleaning the pots, collecting the money, cleaning the temple, doing the construction around the temple. One person. And nobody helps him, and he's harassed by the owners of the temple. You know, they come and they threaten to kick him out of India. So I look at that. Not that I'm trying to put anyone to a guilt trip here. But it's like here in Nugalaka, we have so many people cooking for the deities, dressing the deities, all this and all that, right? And everyone's saying it's not enough people. So, but there's one person taking care of this whole temple. So I become inspired when I see that, when I see what he's doing. I don't feel guilty. You know, I understand I can't do it or serve in this with the same energy that he's doing. But I'm inspired when you see great Vaishnavas. It's just very inspiring. If one's not envious. If one's envious, then one will try to find fault in great Vaishnavas. Oh, like he's chanting so many rounds, but he must not be paying attention. Like Prabhupada said, if you're envious of someone and he's appointed as a Supreme Court judge, you say, well, he may be a Supreme Court judge, but he's probably not getting any salary. So this envy that's in our heart, it's a very dangerous thing when approaching Vaishnavas. That's why generally one should not remain in holy places for very long, because one will offend the great personalities. And when I'm in Govardhan, I'm just very careful. You know, these are all great personalities. They may try to cheat me or whatever they're trying to do, but they're all great. Even the monkeys, they're great personalities. I have to be very, very careful. So it's actually very inspiring. So that's another reason they come down. Another reason is they want to give Krishna consciousness to others, and they have a unique way of giving Krishna consciousness to others. Certainly, Vamsidas Babaji did influence a lot of people when they saw him, in a very unique way. But, you know, he wanted to do it in that particular way. You know, a preacher doesn't have to be so, let's say, so famous or anything like that. Or a preacher is not known by the numbers of people that he converts, but by the quality of the people he deals with. If we could, like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if we could make one or facilitate one person becoming completely Krishna conscious, our life would be successful. One person, if I can do that. And I, you know, I'm just still waiting for my one disciple or one associate or one person I influenced to actually, you know, hit the jackpot, win the lottery. I'm not talking materially, I'm talking about spiritually. One, just one person, then my whole life will be successful. But if I'm just surrounded by everybody being Kanishka Adhikarya, then my life is a failure. So don't judge preachers on the basis of, let's say, how many Kanishka Adhikaris are around them, but on the basis of whether they can turn someone with material consciousness into spiritual consciousness. So, okay? So there's many reasons. And it, you, and then there's also the internal reason, you know, with Bamsidas Babaji, just like having this particular bhava rasa exchange with Krishna in that way. So it comes down. Sometimes on the earth planet, you can have particular exchanges with the Lord you couldn't have in the spiritual world, like if you were a demon. And you have like different types of chivalrous exchanges or different types of, just different types of activities are not enacted in the spiritual world, they're only enacted in this world. So anyway, these are various reasons. All glorious is the language, all glorious is the world, all glorious is the world.